Chicago. ESPN Radio Sports Center.
I'm Doug Brown on the college football scoreboard right now on ABC. Number two Clemson getting a battle in Tallahassee. They lead Florida State, but only 7-0 in the second quarter on a Trevor Lawrence 7-yard touchdown pass to T. Higgins. In the Big Ten in the second quarter, 20th-ranked Wisconsin is at Northwestern and tied at 7 in the second quarter. In Jacksonville today, number 7 Georgia and 9th-ranked Florida. Our coverage kicks off at 2:30 Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Neither the Dodgers nor the Red Sox have announced a starting pitcher for tonight's World Series Game 4. Both managers said TBA after an 18-inning, 7-hour, 20-minute, 3-2 Dodgers win in Game 3, a game that ended on a Max Muncy home run.
Getting a chance to hit a walk-off home run, you know, obviously there's not many words I can use to describe that, dude. Feeling was just pure joy and incredible, incredible excitement, and you know, that's about all I can think of. It's just it's hard to describe how good of a feeling that is.
The Red Sox lead the series 2-1, but on a night when both offenses struggled, the top four batters in the Red Sox lineup went a combined 0-28 with 12 strikeouts. Our Game 4 coverage starts at 7 Eastern here on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. From the NBA, Mavericks point guard Dennis Smith Jr. plans to play tomorrow night against the Jazz. Smith sprained his right ankle on Wednesday night against the Hawks.
Buy a Napa reusable bag today for just 99 cents. You'll get 20% off nearly anything that fits inside, from spark plugs to air fresheners to air filters. All 20% off. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. While supplies last, exclusions apply. Minimum 3 items.
You love college football.
Can he take this home?
You've come to the right place.
He's gone! Touchdown again, Josh Adams!
This is your home for Chicago's college tailgate.
Downfield looking for Godwin into his hands, and guess which dogs are barking first? Ugga, get after it!
Chicago's college tailgate.
Fires to the end zone, touchdown! Alabama wins!
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
The game is over! The Wildcats prevail!
It's time for Chicago's college tailgate on ESPN 1000.
The open field. It's the corner.
Got a great block. Unbelievable. 56 yards. Touchdown, USC.
This is Chicago's college tailgate, along with Chris Black and Adam Abdallah. Here's Jonathan Hood.
It is week 9 of Chicago's college tailgate here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Along with Chris Black and Adam Abdallah, Jonathan Hood with you. So glad you're with us as we lead you into Florida, Georgia at 2:30, followed by Notre Dame against Navy right here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. And Adam, here we go with Notre Dame against Navy. After a week off, the Irish, with that week off, continued their quest for an undefeated season and a chance for the Final Four. They played so well, especially after the quarterback change of Ian Book.
I think the phrase of the week has been, well, Navy always plays Notre Dame close. Right.
Yeah.
This is not that Navy. This is a 3-touchdown dog Navy. Notre Dame, top 5 team in the country now. Like, this is a legit team that should just get right. You should see some Brendan Wimbush late in this game. I think like this should be one of these, let's just get in and get out business trip type of game. Hydrate, because it's going to be like 95 degrees out there. Mm-hmm. Make sure you hydrate. But this should be a get-in-and-get-out with a pretty easy win type of game.
Don't trip up, right? That's the key for the Fighting Irish, because as we sit here in Week 9 of the college football season, we saw last week top teams stumble. Ohio State now knocked out of the conversation of the college football playoffs. So Notre Dame against Navy. You're right, Abdallah. This should not be a contest. Navy run-heavy offense. But if the Fighting Irish can take care of business today, just move on to next week. Keep your name in the conversation for that undefeated season and the college football playoff.
As we always tell you on this program, the trend is your friend. So I just want you to think about this. This game is being played in San Diego, which does not bode well for the Fighting Irish. who have lost the last 7 times they've traveled west of the Rockies. Look out now.
Yes,
look out.
But that was they were playing Stanford, USC, Ohio State, Stanford, USC, Arizona State. Like, they're playing real teams west of the Rockies. They're like Navy, yes.
Are you saying one is not like the other?
I'm saying one of these things is not like the other.
You are un-American, sir. And when you Rush go thinks and, that you're un-American.
And face the Navy. I granted, you've got the full force of the Navy coming up against you, but I think this should just be a pretty easy game. I said that 2 weeks ago, and it was close. Yeah. Closer than the experts thought.
How'd that work against Pittsburgh?
I mean, they won. They survive did. In advance, man.
Late in the fourth survive. Quarter.
If you
took
look
the
5-minute
mark.
Adam, you can't use the college basketball vernacular.
Survive in advance.
Don't use that.
Yeah.
You can't use the round ball for an oblong object.
Get through this week, what? And then next week you have a tough matchup up north against the Wildcats up in Evanston. Tough game. Evanston, it's a tough atmosphere up there. It's loud. It's cold. I don't know what else to say about Northwestern. They should. If you look at Notre Dame's schedule, they are favored in all of their games. They have a very good chance of winning all these games. Their lowest percentage against USC, they have a 66% chance to win that game at the end of the season. They should breeze through until that game. If there was a lock sound, you can lock them into the college football playoff, I believe.
Yeah, if you're looking at just tonight,
you produced that 10 years ago.
Yeah, that was solid there. Current CPI for the FPI, the rankings for Notre Dame, they're 9th in the country. Navy's 102. Mm-hmm. So this is one of those situations. Abdallah, you're right. If you look at this, this should be a lock. There should be no way that Navy wins this ball game. You move on. You play the game in San Diego on the West Coast. You have to come back to the Midwest during the week. They're going to stay an extra day tomorrow to fly back. They're not flying back tonight after the game. So hopefully Notre Dame taking care of the body clock and kind of making sure sleep cycles don't get messed up with the overnight flight from the West Coast back to the Midwest. And then, Abdallah, don't overhype this Northwestern game. You know that 95% of the crowd up in Evanston next week are going to be rooting for the Fighting Irish. Just because they grow the grass a little bit longer up in Evanston, that's not going to have anything to do with this matchup.
It's interesting what you said about staying overnight an extra night in San Diego before coming back. Notre Dame basically realized, Brian Kelly realized their struggles in November during his tenure, and he's gone out of his way. There was a good piece on The Athletic before the season started about what Notre Dame has done to try to get their team ready for the last month of the season and for a championship run, and that involved planning and staying later, getting to venues earlier, staying there later, bringing teachers with them so they don't miss out on classes and that kind of thing, investing in other what are those things, those pods the recovery pods they have. They got a few of those at Notre Dame to help with recovery, so this team can be ready, because it's not November yet. That's why this Navy game could be a layup, but once we get to November, Notre Dame has always struggled that last month of the season, but they've taken all of these extra precautions to try to prevent a slip up late in the season.
Jonathan, Adam, and Chris on Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. See, it's a little bit of a different matchup, guys, when it comes to Notre Dame and Navy, because Ryan Harris, the color analyst for the Fighting Irish, was on my radio show a couple of days ago on Under the Hood, and he talked about when you take on Navy, it's a little bit different when you take on the Seamen.
Number 3, Notre Dame versus Navy.
You know, it's a great question, Hood. I mean, one of the funny things about these games are you get to be face-to-face with the people who are fighting for your freedom, fighting for your right to have fun and play a game. And one of the things coaches always told us, whether it was Willingham or Weiss, Charlie Weiss or Tyrone Willingham, they said, hey, treat these guys with respect. So during the game, you hear the weirdest things on a football field. You hear great effort, great tackle. Hey, can I help you up? Things like that, you know, and it's one of those deals where, you know, you got to kind of still keep a competitive edge while giving the utmost respect and deference. So it's an unusual game. And add to that the fact that Navy's one of the three teams in all of college football who average over 300 yards rushing per game. And you got yourself kind of a situation on your hands from the get-go. You're kind of dialed back on that intensity, not that intensity, but that just that mentality to take somebody out, because you have such respect and reverence for what these guys have gone through. And at the same time, you got to win a football game and stay on track.
It is a little bit odd, Chris, that you're playing football and you have someone from Navy say, hey, great play, great tackle, can I help you up? A little bit different.
Yeah, different, obviously, because of the respect level. I think also, wouldn't you say it would be a little bit different if the teams from the service academies were better on the football field as well? So, you know what I mean? Like, would there be as much respect given if it was LSU-Alabama-level talent facing off?
Probably not.
Probably not, right?
No,
like
not.
Notre Dame, and people want to try and knock their schedule sometimes. One of the best schedules in the country, and the fact that they have to travel from the East Coast to the West Coast, back and forth, and all this different stuff that they do, that teams in the SEC do not do. What team in the SEC is going from the West Coast and then all the way back to the East Coast to play a game this season? I don't think there's anyone in the SEC that will do that. And I think when you look at Notre Dame, the fact that they are so powerful this college football season, they're going against service academies, but the respect level's there, absolutely. Hey, I knocked you down, but can I help you up? Let's go again for the next play.
Yeah, but Notre Dame has to do that. They have to schedule these teams. They have to go to USC. They have to play Florida State
at home.
They could,
if they wanted to. They could just stay in the Midwest.
Well, they could join a conference.
Or just play the ACC schedule
No, that's my – join a conference. Join the Big Ten. Play the Big Ten schools. Win the Big Ten. And you don't have to go out to USC. You don't have to go to Syracuse. You don't have to go to all these places and try to find these games. You don't have to go out to Stanford every other year. They can make it easier on themselves if they want to.
Well, they play Stanford and USC because of the tradition behind it.
Okay, great.
You don't like tradition? You're an Alabama fan. That's your entire livelihood is based on tradition.
I understand that, but Alabama is in a conference, and they play the teams in the conference. Put Notre Dame in the SEC, and let's see what happens.
Well, I think this year they would fare well.
We'll see.
I mean, there's Alabama and LSU. Who else are you offering up there?
Georgia, Florida.
LSU.
Go Tigers.
Georgia.
Florida.
Okay, and Notre Dame's right in that mix.
Missouri.
All right. I don't want to hear anything about Missouri, especially as a Georgia fan. I don't want anything. They blew us off the line of scrimmage so bad in that ball game. It was a win, but it was so ugly. So I don't want to hear anything about Mizzou. Thank you very much. Let's move on. Let's take a look now, guys, at games in progress with Clemson taking on Florida State. Clemson with a 14-0 lead in the beautiful hair of Trevor Lawrence just blowing in the wind. 13 for 22, good for 112 yards, 2 touchdowns for them. And Adam, at this point in time, you can see how Clemson, to this point, seems like they have solidified themselves as the number 2 team in the country.
They have, especially on offense. They're performing really well. They have the easiest path to the playoff. They have the highest percentage of making the playoff besides Alabama right now. We talked about it all season. As long as they didn't trip up, they should be able to make the playoff. They've gotten Trevor Lawrence has now obviously solidified himself as the starting quarterback. They're not trying to do the 2-quarterback thing anymore, obviously, because of the transfer. But right now, Clemson has a pretty easy schedule to that playoff. If I had 3 locks right now, basically, for the college football playoff, it would be Alabama, Clemson, and Notre Dame. It's that fourth team that you kind of rotate week to week depending on how they play. Like Michigan, they're off this week. They could be in there. LSU, let's say they could make a case for them to be in there right now. Georgia could still find themselves in that mix later on in the season. Ohio State could find themselves in the mix. But as far as Clemson goes, I think they're a lock, basically. Now it's just style points.
Okay, so Clemson last week, if we go back to the conversation we had last week in this space, Jonathan and I were here. We weren't like Alabama this week and taking the week off like you last week, Abdallah. But last week, Jonathan, we had the conversation leading into the NC State Clemson game. Mm-hmm. Could NC State throw the ball? Could they score on Clemson? And is this one of those upset spots for a top 5 team against another ranked opponent and kind of knocking them out of the playoff picture?
Right.
And what happened? Clemson won 41-7. They were awesome last week. They're up 14-0 right now on Florida State. But I think last week was one of those statement games, as you started this conversation about Clemson with, Jonathan, is that they made a statement last week. They are for real, second best team in the country, and the decision to go with Trevor Lawrence has started to pay off because the offense is starting to pick up, and Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers are right there. Their defense is fantastic. They held that NC State team last week to 7 points. That's pretty impressive.
It really was, and as I mentioned at the start of this show, week one, week two, the pressure's not on Clemson to win the national title. It's the pressure's on Alabama to win the national championship. Sure. Because Clemson, to me, with Dabo Swinney, the window is open for Clemson whenever they want to go through it, okay, to be able to get themselves in a championship situation for the next 5+ years. So it's not saying that Clemson fans are saying, well, if we don't win, it's okay. But I will tell you this, that for Dabo Swinney, because you're not Alabama, the pressure is not on them to win at all. It's the pressure is on them to have sustained success for that program.
I will say this. Did you guys see what Boston College did to Miami yesterday?
Look out now.
Yeah, it was a good game.
Yeah, and where does Clemson have to go in 2 weeks? To Boston College.
Yeah,
I'm not saying they're not going to win.
Tough.
Well, that's
it's a tough place
to play.
It's a tough place to play against a good Boston College team with a good defense. I'm not saying they're going to lose. That Clemson's going to go in there and lose. But it's going to be tougher of a game than we thought at the beginning of the season.
And what's maybe on paper it doesn't seem this way, but whenever a team goes in and plays at Boston College, because the stadium isn't as big as others, and because you don't expect much, it's a trip-up game for some teams. You know, it's kind of like Washington State up in Pullman.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same level stadium size and crowd size as some of the rest of the Pac-12. Then you get there, and then you're in a fight in the first half, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's like Miami last night. You're down at halftime. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a tough place to play.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the thoughts about Willie Taggart being fired at Florida State, I think, exaggerated to this point. Obviously, a very slow start, losing against VaTech, losing against Syracuse, almost losing to Stanford, by the way. Stanford early. I said Stanford. Stamford, period. But I think that with them being 4-3, they're going to lose one against Clemson, but it's not a situation where it's dire for Florida State. I think they're going to be okay.
They could lose out.
No, I don't.
They have Clemson right now. They have to go to NC State. They have to go to Notre Dame. They get BC at home, and then they have to play Florida at home.
Watch the NC State game here. Careful.
Okay.
Careful.
So they win one game.
So Florida State,
but it's not a 3-win. It's not a Illinois situation at Florida State. That's my point.
You only have 4 wins. That's pretty. At the end of the season, you have 5 wins. It's not Illinois, but this is Florida State. They're not at the same level as Illinois.
You get 5 and maybe a token bowl game at the start of December.
Let's put some context in this, right? So they're 4-3 right now. It looks like they're going to lose today because they are losing to Clemson. Clemson's good, so they go to 4-4. They entered the season 19th overall, ranked coming into the season. Last year they went 7-6. Their over/under win total in Vegas was 7.5.
Oh.
Okay. The FPI suggested that they would get 7.3 wins. So that tells us that coming into the season, the analytics would suggest in Vegas that the under is what would hit. And then we look at the strength of schedule coming into the year. Florida State had the second ranked strength of schedule in the entire country. So a tough schedule, new head coach. Things haven't gone well, but the analytics suggested they would go under anyway. They're going to be 4-4 after today.
Mm-hmm.
So, Abdallah, you're saying there's absolutely no way. I agree that they'll go over the 7.5.
They won't.
No.
If they get two
more wins, like Jonathan suggested, that's right there.
At least one more.
In the ballpark.
At least one more. Five.
Isn't the preseason analytics kind of telling us that that's kind of what we should have expected from Florida State this season?
It's college football. Anything could happen.
The CCT scoreboard on ESPN 1000.
4 times an hour, we update you on the college football scores. Here's Chris Black. Chris?
All right, guys. In the top 25, as we were just talking about, 6 minutes left in the second quarter for Clemson and Florida State. Clemson leads 14-0. Wisconsin and Northwestern are playing up in Evanston at this moment. 4:55 left in the second quarter. It's a tied ball game, 7-7 at this moment. There are only two other games going on in the Big Ten this morning before the games kick off at the 2:30 window. Purdue and Michigan State, 6-6 with 4:11 left in the second quarter. And Bethune-Cookman and Nebraska, 3 minutes left in the second quarter. See, all season long, I've paused dramatically for all the Nebraska scores because it's been an upset alert the entire way. Nebraska's taking care of business against Bethune-Cookman, 35-3.
Oh,
so Scott Frost and Northwestern looking for Nebraska looking for their second
win. It's a tough environment to go into for Bethune-Cookman coming from wherever that school is into Nebraska.
How dare you?
Into Nebraska.
There's a man of color hosting this show.
No. We had to look it up today. Chris and I came in here, real talk, and he goes, "Where is Bethune-Cookman?"
Yes, true.
Okay. And I had to look it up. In Daytona Beach.
How dare you say that about Bethune-Cookman? I dated her.
And that's your Chicago College Tailgate scoreboard.
What? Now time for the playoff predictor.
Chicago's College Tailgate.
The playoff predictor. Sure, it's a guess, but it's as educated of a guess as there can be.
Because when it comes to deciding the four teams in the playoff, everything matters.
In a game of hypotheticals.
Who's in?
Time for the playoff predictor. Here's Chris Black. Chris, let's take a look at the top four. It's not a fait accompli because there's still some irons in the fire for a number of teams.
Okay, as we sit here today in week 9 at the playoff predictor, as we inch closer in this week, on Tuesday will be the first show that releases the rankings for the college football playoff, and you can watch that on ESPN television.
We'll be on also at 6 o'clock on Tuesday breaking that down, won't we, Adam? We'll be on special program here at ESPN 1000. We're making our own programming for the playoff predictor.
I'll take care of that. Yeah, send a note or something.
We're just going to kick out the World Series like that, like it ain't no thing.
All right, so it is college football, my friend.
Yeah.
Sorry, baseball.
What do you mean? What playoff predictor?
Had a good run.
Who said playoff predictor?
Okay, number one in the country at 8-0, Alabama, the Crimson Tide. They're number one in the AP poll. At the moment, they're
number 14, Washington State.
Roll Tide. There it is.
Poor Abdallah.
Sorry.
Strength of schedule 52. And if we look at the Crimson Tide, I think there's no question they're the number one team in the country. Number two, based off the conversation we were just having, Clemson at 7-0 and what they're doing against Florida State, I would put them at the second ranked team in the playoff predictor. Number three, give me the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. 7-0. And I think if you look at what they've done to this point with big wins at Virginia Tech and against Stanford, I think this team is the third-ranked team in the country. And how about this? Because Ohio State lost, it opened up the door for someone new to join the playoff conversation this week. And I'm going to give you guys the LSU Tigers as the fourth team in Week 9 to be in the college football playoff.
Go Tigers.
You know what?
Wow.
Go ahead, Adam, because I have a question about Oklahoma.
Well, okay, so now it's basically there's going to be a fight. Who's going to get left out? Which conference is going to be left out? Because you're going to have either a one-loss Big Ten team or you might have a one-loss Big 12 team. And if we go and you look at the football power index on ESPN.com right now, the top four teams there, Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, and Michigan right now. Oklahoma coming in at number 5, Ohio State number 6, football power index, Notre Dame number 9. If you go by team efficiencies, overall, Alabama's number 1, Georgia's number 2, Clemson's number 3, Michigan number 4, Oklahoma number 5, and let me keep scrolling for Notre Dame, 15th in overall efficiencies for Notre Dame. I'm not saying they're not going to get in. They're going to get win out and you're in. But you're going to have to say this Michigan-Ohio State game, let's say they both meet up, they each have one loss, the winner of that game moves on. Big Ten championship game, whoever wins that game is in the conversation. You also have Oklahoma. You get to the Big 12 championship game, they win that, they have a big matchup. So now you're trying to figure out which team is better, which loss is not as bad. If Ohio State beats Michigan, goes to the Big Ten championship game and wins that, is their loss to Purdue worse than Oklahoma's loss to Texas? Yes, it is a lot worse than losing to Texas.
Georgia should be in that four with Clemson, Alabama, Notre Dame. Say Georgia wins out. Say they win against Florida today and they win out, okay? That loss against LSU is no shame versus Michigan's loss to Purdue.
Yeah.
And I will also say this about Oklahoma. After really taking a good close look at Oklahoma, who they really play? Seriously. No. I mean, to me, a one-loss Oklahoma team, Oklahoma to me should not be in that conversation.
Well, Oklahoma is based on how good Texas has been, because Texas is who beat them. So one loss was a shootout, 48-45.
Other than that,
against
though,
Texas, everything else. I mean, they did beat Iowa State, which is a tough team. You look down the schedule, they're going to have to face Oklahoma State and West Virginia, who's ranked at the moment. But you're right, it's not the toughest strength of schedule. If you look at it compared to everyone else, they're ranked 32nd in strength of schedule. If we're comparing Oklahoma, I think Georgia has the best argument right now, because from the FBI, they're the third-ranked team in the country. Mm-hmm. So if you take a look between Michigan, Texas, Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State, I mean, Georgia does have a legitimate conversation to have if they can beat Florida today, Georgia, and be in that college football playoff.
Georgia has is the best one-loss team out there,
yes,
to me.
Yes, correct. Now, I'm saying, and I would love it if Georgia wins, and on Tuesday the rankings come out and you've got two SEC teams, just to annoy everybody. They'd be screaming about it, which would be great. But I'm talking about at the end of the season. Is a one loss, including the Big 12 championship game and Big 10 championship game, those two teams out of the Big 10 and Big 12 will only have one loss. Can Georgia win the SEC championship game? And if they lose that, I don't think they're in the conversation, because you have teams that have won their championship games.
Well, and also, just to take to one step back, though, if you say they're the best one loss team, they lost to LSU and they're a one loss team. So I think that's why LSU is in that fourth spot right now. I don't think you can argue that Georgia at the moment is better than LSU. LSU has had way better, more impressive wins to this point this season. Beating a ranked Auburn, beating Miami early. I know Miami is disappointed this year, but when you go through the schedules, you have to look at what the team was at that moment when they lost.
Yeah.
And Miami, that was a big matchup to start the season. You beat Auburn on the road. You lose to Florida, who is also highly ranked. You beat Georgia. I mean, all the opportunities are for LSU to be in the playoff. But the problem is they might get steamrolled next weekend against Alabama, and now you're a two-loss team.
What you mean?
And that's where Georgia comes
what
in.
What you mean might? That's going to happen.
Well, Death Valley at night, guys.
Just
come on.
Put in two SEC teams on Tuesday. Please.
Please.
Just please do it.
Has Tua Tagovailoa seen Death Valley at night yet?
Has he seen a fourth quarter?
No, he hasn't.
Okay, there you go.
LSU, as you mentioned, the rest of their schedule, after their loss against Alabama, which will happen, Arkansas, Rice, Texas A&M. They'll be a two-loss ball club, and they won't be in that conversation anymore for the Final Four.
Fast forward to next week. Do you remember when I was talking you off the ledge about Georgia, saying this is not the same Georgia team, you don't have to worry about it? You guys are going to have to do that to me next week. Because I've had nightmares of Ed Orgeron grumbling in my dreams for the last
We're going to go out there. We're going to play the game. We're going to get the game come to us. We're going to play some defense. They're going to play some defense. We're going to run the ball. We're going to eat some gumbo, run the ball some more, get some etouffee. You know how it is. We're going to do the run the ball. Go Dogs.
Yeah. No, go Dogs, because he beat them. He's supportive.
And that's our playoff predictor here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Just one more other thing about the Big Ten, right? One other thing. Do you think Michigan is going to win out the rest of their games? What do you think of Michigan?
See, the Ohio State game is so tough. And then you also have to face Penn State. I mean, Penn State's a good football team.
I think
team.
Penn State is a shell of what it was last year. And I think that Michigan's better than Ohio State.
It's
right
still
now.
A tough spot next week at home against Penn State. It's going to be tough for Michigan. I know that they're playing really well, and you could also argue they're a completely different team than what they were at the start of the season when they lost to Notre Dame, and we all sit here and like Notre Dame as well. So, I mean, Michigan should be in that conversation with LSU and Georgia as well.
All right, that's our playoff predictor right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We'll turn to Chris Childers from Sirius XM. We'll get his thoughts about what's going on in the college football picture, including Notre Dame. He's a big Notre Dame fan. Can they continue to run the table? We'll talk to Chris about that coming up next.
All of the latest college football scores, previews, and lines. Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000. The CCT Scoreboard on ESPN 1000.
Time for a CCT Scoreboard. Here's Chris Black. Chris?
Here's a look at the top 25 at the moment. Clemson's up 21-0 on Florida State with 3:34 left in the second quarter. Wisconsin is trailing to Northwestern at the moment. 21 seconds left in the second quarter.
Look out.
Northwestern's up 14-10 on the Badgers. The Badgers are ranked 20th in the country. Other scores going on in the Big Ten at this moment. Purdue and Michigan State. Michigan State's up 13-6 with 56 seconds left in the second quarter. And at halftime, Nebraska's up 38-3 on Bethune-Cookman. And that's at the half. That's a look at the college football scoreboard here on Chicago's College Tailgate.
This is your home for Chicago's College Tailgate and the home for Fighting Irish football. ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Chicago's College Tailgate here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Glad that you are with us. Jonathan, Adam, and Chris with you. Follow us on Twitter at ESPN 1000 CCT or also on the Facebook wall, Facebook.com. Look for Chicago's College Tailgate as we build a bridge to Florida, Georgia, 2:30 kick. And then, of course, Notre Dame taking on Navy right here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. We turn to SiriusXM, ESPNU Radio. You can catch this guy on Full Ride with Rick Neuheisel. Chicago's own Chris Childers joins us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Chris, Jonathan, Adam, and Chris, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, it's good to be on, guys. Happy game day to you.
Happy game day to you, sir. We were just talking about Notre Dame, obviously, with them having a tremendous season. What are your thoughts on the rest of the season for Notre Dame? Do you feel that they can run the table based on their schedule?
I do. I mean, I think it's going to be scary. As a guy who grew up, you know, loving Notre Dame and following Notre Dame and wanting Notre Dame to always.
We will reconnect with Chris Childers in just a moment here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
So if we take a look at Notre Dame's schedule through the rest of the way through today, as long as you don't trip up against Navy, you do have a shot to run the table. Syracuse can be tough. Florida State, as we're seeing this season, underperforming. And then the USC game at the end of the year, which I think at this moment, we'll see what happens. But JT Daniels not going to play today for USC. So, I mean, that could be a dramatically different game as well in favor of the Irish as well as the schedule goes on.
Yeah, but that tough game, don't forget about that tough game up north in Evanston next week. Stop. Northwestern leading right now. 14-10 over Wisconsin. As you said, Chris, upset special going on.
Number 3, Notre Dame versus Navy.
Chris, you were saying about Notre Dame. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at the schedule coming up, there's going to be some tough games ahead for Notre Dame. I'm actually kind of worried still about the USC game at the end of the year. It's in Los Angeles. I know USC's had some issues. There's a lot of talk about Clay Helton in the hot seat, and who knows what they're going to be by then, by that final week of the regular season. But, you know, if you look at Notre Dame, they're going to be favored in every game along the way, including today against Navy. They should win, but to me, you know, they have too many close calls. I do love the defense. I love what Clark Lee's doing on that side of the football. I have some concerns going into the year, losing Mike Elko. I think Mike Elko is absolutely one of the premier top coordinators in the country. He went to A&M, so I had some concerns there. They've been fabulous. So, you know, those concerns have been alleviated on that side of the football. Offensively, though, we've seen some iffy moments with Ian Book. There's just some times where the offense stalls a little bit too much for my liking. You know, what's going to happen along the way in a key moment? You know, can he overcome? Can he lead the team in a playoff moment, you know, with the big bullseye on the back kind of a situation? Time will tell for Notre Dame. You got to love the effort so far. You got to love the way they've been able to navigate through the season up to this point. So I think for me, it's just a cautious optimism moving forward. Love the defense. The offense at times can look pretty good with Ian Book. Sometimes they stall out. So I'm hopeful, but not convinced they're a lock yet to get to the college football playoff by any means at this point.
Looking ahead, what has Brian Kelly done and how has he approached the team to make sure they don't have their usual November slip up?
I mean, I know it sounds cliche and it's very coach speaky, but you really have to take it one game at a time. You can't be thinking ahead to the college football playoff. And for Notre Dame, to me, there's really no wiggle room. I mean, I guess at 11-1, depending on who they lost to, they'd be in the mix. But without having that 13th data point at the end of the year, without having a conference championship game and one extra boost for the college football playoff committee to look at data-wise, and I've been through that mock playoff process before, and I see how much they value certain things and certain quality wins. And for Notre Dame, there hasn't been a lot of quality win opportunities this year. So I think for him, perfection would be in their best interest to get to 12-0. There's no way that Notre Dame's getting left out of the playoff at 12-0. I mean, there's just no way in the world that's going to happen. 11-1 with that schedule would be a little bit iffy, especially without the 13 data points. So I think for them, I think they're a better football team than every team they're going to play moving forward, including Navy today. Even though Navy presents its issues with the triple option, but I think if they take every game one game at a time, don't look at the big picture, don't worry about the playoffs, they should be in good shape because they are better than every team they're playing moving forward on the schedule.
Chris, in previous years, we've kind of seen Brian Kelly botch and mismanage quarterback situations. What he's doing this year and the decision he made to go to Ian Book and Brandon Wimbush, is this the best he's handled the quarterback situation since he's been at Notre Dame?
I think so, but I think it was fairly obvious. I mean, I'm not sure you could have kept going with this guy and had any kind of success. I mean, the expectations at Notre Dame are always off the charts. And Brandon Wimbush has had, like, a really long case of the yips. I mean, it's really the only way to put it. At times last year, you know, back in 2017, it was painful, you know, watching him in some game situations. Even I remember Brian Kelly saying that he couldn't watch warm-ups because, you know, Wimbush was all over the place. I know they wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. He had a good spring. His fall camp, I guess, was encouraging. And they wanted to give Wimbush every opportunity to win this team and be the starting quarterback because he is a really good athlete. I mean, that's the thing. Wimbush is a talented kid. He's an athletic dude. But he can't hit the broad side of the barn. So, to me, it was just fairly obvious that a quarterback change needed to be made. I give them credit for making it and riding with Ian Book. And it helped that, you know, that first game with Ian Book, I think, was the Wake Forest game where the numbers were gaudy and the offense seemed in sync. So, I think after that, it was an easy buy-in for everybody in the locker room. Anybody that might have been loyal to Brandon Wimbush, it was kind of obvious to see how significantly improved the offense was when Book came in against Wake. So I think it was fairly simple from that angle. But, I mean, to answer your question, yeah. I mean, as far as managing it and the results that have come from it, I think he's done a heck of a job with that.
Chris Childers, who agrees with me that Joe Girardi should be the next White Sox manager, joins us here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app on Chicago's College Tailgate. So, Chris, how do you see the world's largest outdoor cocktail party? As Chris said this week, if anyone says that it's not the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, you know, go to hell. You still feel strongly about that. How do you see the matchup?
Well, thank you for calling it that, because I think they're calling it the River City Shootout or Showdown or something stupid like that, which is just so dumb. I think it's going to be a really interesting game. I really do. I think this game is a pick'em kind of game. It's going to be a, you know, late in the fourth quarter, late field goal type of deal. And I don't think a lot of people expected that a couple weeks ago. You know, a couple weeks ago, Georgia was undefeated. Everything's looking good. They're running the football well. They're stopping people defensively. And I know, you know, certain times in certain games there were some things exposed. But for the most part, you know, you look at that Georgia football team and they were handling their business. Then the LSU game happened. And I think it completely changed the complexion of this game because Georgia was like number two in the country and they're thinking playoff and all that kind of stuff. And then LSU just hits them in the mouth and they completely slowed down that running game with DeAndre Swift and Holyfield. And Jake Fromm had some big issues in that game when he needed to make some plays in the passing game. He wasn't able to do that against LSU. That exposed a lot of things. And for people like me, you know, I still like that Georgia football team. I'm still encouraged, certainly, about the direction coming off the appearance in the national championship game and their start this year. But I can't unsee what happened against LSU. I mean, I just can't unsee that. So it certainly makes me wary. A couple weeks back, nobody would have thought this game would have been competitive. But Florida keeps winning, and they bounce back from that loss to Kentucky in week two, and they've been hot ever since. They're playing exceptionally well on the defensive side of the football. They're running the ball well, too. Felipe Franks is still a work in progress, but I think it's just going to be an even game, great rivalry game, 50-50 as far as the crowd. It's the world's largest outdoor cocktail party for a reason, because there are just throngs of people outside of the stadium, and they're all super hammered going into kickoff. So everybody's like full of hate and anxiety and all that kind of stuff. Everything you want in a great rivalry, as long as things don't get too out of hand. But I think it's just going to be a great game. I think it's going to be an epic battle Saturday in the SEC, 3:30 CBS, everything you want. And I think that's what we're going to get today in Jacksonville.
You said you've gone through the college football playoff committee process before. So on Tuesday, we get the first rankings. Who are your top four teams?
So, well, I mean, number one's obvious. It's Alabama. And number two, based on what's happening right now, should be pretty obvious because Clemson's up big on Florida State. So I think the Tigers are going to be there. I think more than likely you're going to have LSU sitting there in the three slot, and I think you're going to have Notre Dame at four. And the only reason I say that, LSU I know is a one-loss football team, and Notre Dame is undefeated. I think the quality of wins we factored in, you know, they've beaten Georgia. They've beaten some other good teams. They've won on the road. I think that's going to be factored in for LSU. And that'll be taken care of because Alabama and LSU will play next weekend. So certainly if LSU wins, they'll either stay with her. I would imagine they'd move up after beating Alabama. And Alabama would be slid down. So that'll take care of itself the week after. But I think it's probably going to be Bama, Clemson, LSU, Notre Dame. If everything holds today, if everything holds for the weekend, I think that's probably going to be our first top four on Tuesday.
Chris, I know you'd rather be in a Wrigleyville bar, but you're home here in Tennessee and get your feet up for college football. I'm glad you spent some time, man. Thanks so much for coming on our show.
It is an honor to be on with you guys. Enjoy game day. It should be a fun one today, especially that one in the SEC. And thanks for having me on again.
It is Chris Childers with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app from Sirius XM. ESPNU Radio, and he works with Rick Neuheisel, who will probably be looking for a new job at some point too, right? He should be coaching again, even though he does a good job doing.
Yeah, you know how it works in college football. Give the commentator on TV another shot, right?
Yeah.
When's Wani get a shot?
He and Liner on
Fox are going to team up with the team. Liner takes care of the offense. Wani takes care of the defense.
I mean, Herm's going to look pretty good after he beats USC tonight.
No, I don't think so. And listen, here's the key. Remember when the show started around Labor Day that weekend?
Yeah.
Started the season? Don't confuse little excitement in September for long-term success. ASU has struggled this year. Even though they were a cute little team in September.
Cutting down Herm.
I'm just letting you know. Well, I told you, it's going to be, we're going to look back at Herm Edwards at ASU.
Cutting down Herm.
Yeah, leave him there. That's great. That's good for SC. Now, listen, their quarterback, they're starting a redshirt freshman quarterback today. Of course they're going to lose.
Time for a scoreboard.
The CCT scoreboard on ESPN 1000.
Who hurt you?
Here's Chris. Clay Helton hurt me, okay? That's who.
Well, Lynn Swan.
Jonathan, back to you.
Now we turn to a CCT scoreboard here on 710 ESPN LA. Here is Chris Black. Chris?
Clemson's up four scores with a minute left in the second quarter, 28-0 against Florida State at this moment. Wisconsin Northwestern at halftime. Northwestern leads 14-10. There are only two other games going on of note, two in the Big Ten at the moment. Michigan State leads at halftime over Purdue, 13-6, and Nebraska still at halftime over Bethune-Cookman, 38-3, and that's the scoreboard.
Will Urban Meyer be at Ohio State this time next year? We discuss it next.
Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. This is Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000 with Jonathan, Chris, and Adam on ESPN 1000. Follow us on Twitter at ESPN 1000 CCT and on Facebook at Chicago's College Tailgate.
Glad that you're with us for Chicago's College Tailgate here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Jonathan, Adam, and Chris with you. One of the storylines for the week, guys, was question marks about Urban Meyer, whether Urban Meyer is starting to look like Urban Meyer from Florida. You remember those pieces on ESPN, right? Tired, maybe worn out, burned out. Remember, he was an analyst for ESPN for a year, kind of resetting the batteries. Paul Feinbaum was talking about Feinbaum at Ohio State. Could this be the last year for Urban Meyer at Ohio State?
I'm hearing a lot of whispers that this will be Urban Meyer's final season in Columbus. And you go back to August with the controversy over Zach Smith. You talked about Gene Smith, the tension between them. You saw it at that press conference. You also know by now, as everyone, that a member of the Board of Trustees wanted more severe punishment and ended up resigning. That was before the season started. And, of course, Urban missed the first couple of games. And since he's been back, Ohio State had won until Saturday night, coming from behind to beat Penn State. But they have not looked good. Urban Meyer's demeanor on the sidelines has been curious. He has complained several times of headaches. And having covered Urban Meyer at the University of Florida, Kate, this looks like a rerun. It looks like deja vu. Urban Meyer walked away down there when the pressure got too much, and I believe he'll do the same thing at the end of the season here.
Kirk Herbstreit, he concurs.
The way he's looked since he's been at Ohio State where he said, listen, if I'm going to take this Ohio State job after what I went through in Florida, I'm going to keep my priorities straight, family first, not going to get out of whack. And if you watch him on the sidelines since he has been back, he looks just the word I've used is anguish. He looks frustrated. He looks very emotional and erratic. And his team right now, you're going to find out what they're made out of because, like I said, you lost to Iowa last year. You had leaders to get you back. You lose this year. We'll see how they respond. But they've got some big problems.
Just based on a whoosh, it sounds like he was on the Dan Patrick Show, Kirk Herbstreit. Chris, what do you think of that?
It's a bit surprising. If we take a look into heading into the offseason, I would be surprised if Urban Meyer stepped away from Ohio State because throughout all the scandal leading up through the start of this season, it seemed as if Urban Meyer was steadfast in that he did nothing wrong, but it seems as if the pressure from that whole scandal has gotten to him personally, and that would push against staying there. But to me, hearing Feinbaum talk about that this week, I found it to be shocking. I wonder if information like this was leaked because they had such a bad game on Saturday against Purdue. You see what I'm saying? Because someone talked to Feinbaum and gave him this information that in-game, Urban Meyer has been complaining about headaches, and in-game, he hasn't seemed the same. So why did this come out this week after they got hammered last week against Purdue?
The medication, Adam?
You see what I'm saying? Like,
no, I think that this may have been leaked because Ohio State needs to be reminded what they have. They have Urban Meyer. They have one of the best college football coaches in the country. Urban Meyer doesn't need Ohio State. Ohio State needs Urban Meyer.
I think that's true because he's absolutely, Saban is a Hall of Famer and what he's done and built that program at Alabama is incredible. But Saban, if you have one game to win, Saban's the best coach in college football.
Yes, but I'm saying that if
Urban Meyer's in the team photo for that.
Yes, and if Urban Meyer leaves Ohio State, what are they going to do? Who are they going to get?
Well, I mean, you're not going to get anyone better than Urban Meyer.
So Urban Meyer can have his pick of jobs of the, obviously he's not taking Alabama, Clemson, those jobs, Michigan, those types of jobs. But if he wanted to go somewhere else, he could have his pick. He could sit out if he wanted to another year and then wait for something, some other shoe to drop and take any job he wants to. This may have been leaked by Urban, by his people, just to say, hey, you guys might want to make sure I'm comfortable here.
Yeah, you guys wanted me out? Well, guess what?
Yeah.
Maybe I am going to leave, and maybe I'll go somewhere else.
Pac-12?
There's a team in Southern California that has definitely struggled last couple of years with Clay Helton at the helm. That would be the hire.
Okay. Yeah, and they would instantly be the best team in the Pac-12 if they did that. As far as recruiting and coaching and everything goes. And that's the point, is Urban may know that as soon as he leaves, he can go and get the USC job if he wants.
We got a CCT scoreboard and Georgia-Florida conversation next.
You love college football? You've come to the right place. Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Roll Tide.
Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Along with Adam Abdallah and Chris Black, Jonathan Hood with you. Follow us on Twitter at ESPN1000CCT or on the Facebook wall, Facebook.com. Glad to have you in for Chicago's College Tailgate. This half hour, we'll hear from Andy Hutchins, who covers the Florida Gators for SB Nation. We'll get his thoughts about the big matchup, especially for yours truly as a Georgia fan. Georgia, Florida, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party.
How do you feel going into that matchup?
Always butterflies.
Yeah.
Always butterflies. It doesn't matter if Florida's down or if Georgia's... Georgia's not, they underachieve. They're never down, so sometimes they underachieve. But I feel good about the matchup today.
As a Georgia Bulldog fan, is this the biggest game on your schedule each year? Is that the one that you get excited about the most heading through the season?
There's no doubt because of the pageantry and the tradition of that matchup. And there's been some years where Florida's been down, Adam. But the point is that this is always good. It is the cliche of throughout the records because there's so much emotion into that game. And it's one of those things where because it's such a rivalry, these two teams playing, that whatever you get from the crowd, the energy permeates to the field for both teams. So I just think that for me, looking at this game, Georgia has to be a lot more aggressive than what they have. Because as I told you guys to start with, as someone as a forward-thinking, rational Georgia fan, I told you that it was going to be a stumbling block for Georgia at some point this season, that they weren't going to go undefeated. I didn't know it was going to be the LSU game, but it was the LSU game. And so, to me, this is, to me, a winnable game for Georgia, but how they have to win it this way. I want to see Georgia the way they played postseason after the regular season last year, where Fromm was more aggressive down the field. The running game is not as sharp as it has been the last couple of years because we're talking about Holyfield. We're talking about Swift, a couple of kids. But he's got to be able to open up the passing game to set up the running game. It's got to be the opposite. Throw to get the football down the field to set up the running game. And I think that they can get Florida on their heels.
I think that this is one of the great games in college football.
Well, there's only one other big rivalry game that takes place at a neutral location each and every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the game in the Cotton Bowl between Oklahoma and Texas.
Oh, neutral. I thought you meant
number 3 Notre Dame versus Navy.
Not that one.
No, not in San Diego. No, but like if we look at the pageantry and why mm-hmm. college football is so special and why the three of us love college football so much, it's today's game, Georgia and Florida. Is right up there into why that factors in, right? That Oklahoma-Texas game kind of has the same exact vibe, and there's not much like that across the country, and that's why it's special.
And this game is basically for the SEC East. Like, the winner of this game can go on, win the SEC East, and face Alabama, LSU, whoever ends up winning the SEC West. So this is a big game for not only for Georgia, you know, coming off a loss, having to trying to right the ship, trying to have a say in the college football playoff, but also for Florida, who... with the new coach, with Mullen, with coming in and trying to set themselves up, they could be ahead of schedule with this team right now. This is kind of surprising for
statement,
him.
Statement game action?
Well, this is, you know, maybe not Florida is ahead of schedule. Are we overrating Florida? But in this game, if they should win against Georgia, saying, we're here. Like, we didn't go any, like, we're Florida. Florida is back, folks, is what we're saying. And yeah, exactly. And it might scare you.
Gator chomp!
It might scare you.
You know why that's the case is because Monday I'm going to hear it from Alex Brown.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't deal with that. I can't deal with that. I hate Florida so much in this game. I hate them.
He's
going to
wait till Monday?
Yeah. Well, he'll text me, but then he's got to come on the show Monday night with me, and then it's going to be just a mess. I hate Florida so much in this game. And because as a Georgia fan, nothing gets me more geared up and supports my team than this matchup here. So I'm looking forward to this. But Dan Mullen had some things to say, but go ahead.
Yeah, and we're going to look at the quarterback situation. Jonathan, you talked about Jake Fromm. He struggled against LSU a couple weeks ago. And Florida's defense, we're going to talk about Dan Mullen and his offense and what he used to have at Florida and then what he had at Mississippi State now coming back to Florida. But the defense has been the key to the success for the Gators this year. They're first in opponent completion percentage in the SEC this year. They're first in sack percentage in the SEC this year. And they're first in turnover percentage this year in the SEC. So Florida's defense is leading the way, and that's where Jake Fromm really needs to step up today. Justin Fields, will we see him at all also in backfield at quarterback for Georgia?
Well, Alabama's the leader, so everyone's got to do what Alabama does.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, I mean, here's the thing. Fields was a highly touted quarterback coming out of high school, right? And so he is that he's that lightning to the thunder of Jake Fromm. So we've always seen him out there for a certain selection of plays, a little guy out there. So this is supposed to be Alabama's. This is supposed to be Georgia's Tua. So we'll see what happens. So some thoughts from Tony Schiavone. Who I had on, by God, Tony Schiavone, the executive producer of Georgia Football on the IMG Sports Network. I asked Tony about his impressions on the quarterback situation for Georgia.
Number 7 Georgia versus number 9 Florida.
I like what he's been doing so far. I think I know there's been he made a couple critical mistakes against LSU, but it's awfully hard to point out what he's in a loss like that, what he's done wrong. I like him because he's a leader, and he kind of reminds me of Aaron Murray in many, many ways, his size, his demeanor, and Aaron Murray was like that as well. One of the things that's big in this Atlanta, Metro Atlanta area now is the quote-unquote quarterback controversy that's going on between Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, and Justin Fields was the number one quarterback. Recruit in the nation, and we got him. He's a dual threat quarterback. He can run. There's a lot of people said, Justin Fields should be able to play more, and it's just maddening. It's crazy. Anytime that someone brings up the quarterback situation during the press conferences on a weekly basis, Kirby kind of bristled at first, but now he's just kind of gotten over it. It's funny because, you know, we see four quarters a week, and those guys, those coaches see all these practices and what these guys can do and learning the system and everything. I trust what Kirby, the coaches, think, but I really think that Justin Fields is a very talented kid. And to be honest with you, just a personal preference here that unless he can get some substantial playing time, I don't know if we can keep him because he's just that talented to where he should be playing every day.
That's always a concern, Chris, when you have two talented quarterbacks. You saw what happened at Clemson as Trevor Lawrence is the number one quarterback at Clemson. You know, unless you are a Nick Saban type figure that can massage, bring both quarterbacks together and say, Jalen, we need you because Alabama does need Jalen and they also need Tua. It's hard to be able to keep two talented quarterbacks, especially today.
Yeah, millennial, me first, I need the opportunity culture that we live in college athletics and just in today's society, right? Because if someone else is getting the starting gig, you don't go back and work harder and try and figure out a way to surpass that person. You just leave school and find somewhere else where you can get the shine. And that's kind of what the allusion is there, where we're looking ahead, and maybe that happens with Georgia with Justin Fields in the future.
Yeah, and I think that, like you said, Jonathan, Saban's done a very good job of kind of tempering expectations and using whether or not he used an actual quarterback controversy to move this along. But they've obviously needed Tua. Tua saw, and Jalen saw that they needed Tua last year too, because Tua played just as much as Jalen did last year. There were games when Alabama was up just as much as they've been up last year, and Tua would come in the fourth quarter of games and light up the scoreboard. And they both needed each other, and they work with each other all week. And so you see, for some reason, Saban's been able to do it. I don't know how the other coaches will be able to, but you have to find a way to have a good backup in there as well.
And transfer rules have changed in recent years, and I'm saying the millennial culture and wanting to transfer schools and going somewhere else to get your shine as a millennial too. I'm not saying it as like someone who doesn't relate to the culture. Like, I understand why these guys are doing it, but it's just different than what we used to see. You used to see a backup try and work harder and try and surpass that person instead of just leaving the school.
You're listening to Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, along with Adam Abdallah and Chris Bleck. Jonathan Hood with you. We're going to lead you into Georgia, Florida at 2:30 right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We go to SB Nation, part of the Alligator Army. It is Andy Hutchins from SB Nation. He joins us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Andy, it's Jonathan, Adam, and Chris. Thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Looking forward to the game today, just like everyone else. Tell us your thoughts about the ebb and flow of Florida's season so far. What has stood out most?
You know, I think Florida being confident on offense is really what stands out. Florida fans have been waiting and waiting for a return to the glory days of Steve Spurrier and Urban Meyer, watching Jeff Driscoll and Treon Harris and other players like that sort of struggle to be confident on offense on a consistent basis. But Dan Mullins really seemed to bring that back. Felipe Franks looks a whole lot better than he did last year, and Florida's got a pretty good running game in the form of handing it off to Jordan Scarlett and Michael Pirine. And, you know, basically it looks like Florida should look to a lot of fans. I think that's really what fans like the most. Despite the fact that, obviously, you know, early season loss to Kentucky happened, you know, Florida's been pretty good since then, and I think fans are pretty appreciative of it.
Andy, a couple minutes ago, we were talking about how good Florida's defense has been to this point in the season, how opportunistic they've been on defense, getting the turnovers and being good at sack percentage and all the different stats that are key in the SEC. What has been the secret sauce for this defense at this point in the season?
You know, I think it's both Todd Grantham's scheme, which is really sort of a pressure when you can scheme and bring pressure from any different angle that you can think of. And also really good players on the edge. Ja'Kai Polite and Tagari Zuniga are really good edge rushers, Polite especially. I think you're probably going to see him be a first-rounder in next year's NFL draft. And, you know, when you've got guys who can bring pressure if you're only getting four, but then you add enough talent back in the back end, you know, whether it's cornerback C.J. Henderson or safety Brad Stewart, to really be able to do things if you just go man and bring five or six, you got a really special team when it comes to blitzing.
Florida 7-1 this season. They've got good wins against Mississippi State. They beat LSU earlier in October. Is Florida ahead of schedule than where they thought they would be?
Definitely, I think. I think the LSU win really more than anything proves that they're ahead of schedule, because LSU is a team that people are looking at as a playoff contender. None of the other wins this season are really on par with that. Obviously, Tennessee's not anywhere near where Tennessee is at its peak. Mississippi State definitely doesn't look like the same team it was when Mullen was there last year. But when you beat LSU, when it's a good LSU team, you've got to think that your team is pretty good, and Florida certainly did that. So, you know, that win alone looks like ahead of schedule. If Florida goes and wins today, obviously it's going from ahead of schedule to, wow, this team is much better than people anticipated.
Andy Hutchins from SB Nation and Alligator Army, he's with us here on Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Andy, for those that have not been to this game or not watched this game, how big is Georgia-Florida every year?
You know, it's weird because it's the big game that feels like it should be an early season game, or feels like it just feels like it takes place on a completely different plane than any other game. Jacksonville is kind of remote, even for Florida. You got to drive south if you're from Georgia. You got to drive northeast if you're in Gainesville. And it's just sort of an island of fans for the weekend. People drive over, fans line the streets, sort of, and you've got teams that drive over a bridge that comes down into Jacksonville, and it's just sort of a sea of blue and red. The stadium itself is a sea of blue and red, split half and half. And it just feels like a big game every year just because it's so 50-50 and so cherished by both teams. Even though Georgia fans are probably a little less happy to have it happening in the state of Florida than Florida fans are.
If Florida can win today and beat Georgia, what do you think the odds are for them to finish out the schedule and actually get to the college football playoff?
You know, I still don't think they're that good, partly because I don't know whether Florida can make it in as a two-loss team with a loss to presumably Alabama in the SEC championship game and a one to Kentucky. You take Georgia's place, and you think probably you've got a shot to at least be in a play-in game in the SEC championship game. Obviously, Florida would still need to run the table in November, which isn't a given, though Georgia, I think, is the best team left on Florida's schedule. But you know, this is a team that has a really big opportunity today, and I think that everyone on that sideline is going to be aware of it.
We're in Big Ten country up here. For people who aren't familiar with SEC football, what do SEC fans of other teams besides Alabama, how do they talk about their teams in reference to Alabama? Like you just said, oh, well, Florida could be a one-loss team, but they're going to lose that to Alabama in the SEC championship game. How does the conversation go around other SEC teams when you have the best team in the country in your conference?
You know, I think it's been different prior to this year, because I don't think Alabama's been seen quite as this has been a really good Alabama team and a really good Alabama program for years and years and years, but Tua being there makes this Alabama team look close to unassailable. I mean, that is a different dimension for that offense. Adding basically the best quarterback, I think, in college football to the best program in college football when it comes to recruiting, developing, etc., that makes it look different. And it really is difficult for me to say that any team in college football is going to beat Alabama this year. Years past, maybe you think, oh, Alabama is sort of the standard bearer, the team that you got to catch up to. This year, I think you got to look at Alabama on your schedule and just say, that's an L. I hope we look good, but that's an L.
Andy, as always, we appreciate it, man. We'll be watching Georgia-Florida. It's going to be so much fun.
Thanks for having me.
It is Andy Hutchins from SB Nation. He's with us here on Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. By the way, as we get ready for a scoreboard, I just want to point out that you know what we're missing, Chris? Without Alabama being out there for us to watch today, you know what we're missing?
What are we missing?
We're missing a team that has run roughshod over their opponents over the first 8 weeks of the season. You know, with at least five games left in the schedule, Alabama has already scored 50 points six times this season. The only SEC team with more 50-point games in a season was the Florida team in 1996 when they won the national championship. You realize that the Crimson Tide's closest game in conference play was 45-23 against Texas A&M. There's no question that that is a national championship team. That's why I don't worry about Alabama against LSU.
Yeah, and earlier in the week, the Action Network had a pretty interesting article about how dominant the Alabama offense has been this season. And basically what they did is they took a look and they decided that if Alabama were to take a knee on each and every single play of the second half of each and every game this season, and then kind of compare what the stats would be if Alabama just need the ball every second half of every game, this is what the stats would be. across the country, yards per play, the Crimson Tide would be ranked 25th in the nation if they took a knee on every single play of the second half of every single game they've played to this point. Points per possession, they'd be 16th. Points per game, 15th in the country. How about this? Yards per game, they would be 113th with no yardage, only negative yardage in the second half of games this season. And percentage of possessions with points that they would score on, because they score so much in the first half, they'd be ranked 11th in the country if they just took a knee for every single play of the second half of each and every game. That's how good Alabama's been.
Tagovailoa, by the way, has thrown 25 touchdowns without an interception this season. He is the fourth quarterback in the past 20 years to throw at least 25 touchdowns before his first interception, and the first since Marcus Mariota in 2013. Yeah. Do you remember Mariota being this good?
Well, yeah, because those Oregon teams were putting up, what, 60, 70 points. They were just running up and down the field with touchdowns at ease. And I think Mariota has two records in that category. If you look at like the top five best ratings, Mariota's in there twice for two separate seasons. That's how good he was.
You know, Adam, this is us talking about how hot the girl is in the same room, and she's blushing.
I'll have you know that the last 2 years they've averaged more yards per play, though.
It is like you and I talking about the hot girl in the same room. So the 10 that knows she's a 10.
You have to understand that this is the 2 weeks of LSU. This is when every Alabama fan has 2 weeks to sit there and nitpick the team and figure out what is wrong. I'm telling you. I will have you know, though, also, for gambling aspects, they are Washington State has covered every game so far of their season. Alabama has covered every first half spread so far this season. So Alabama in the first half, and we all know LSU is going to be without their star linebacker for the first half of next game. So if you're looking for a value play, Alabama should be like a 10-point favorite probably in the first half.
Also, with all the big point spreads, Alabama's games for the most part this season have gone under the number as well. So if you're looking at the total, you think, oh, look at all those points that Alabama can score in the first half. Look at all the, oh, wow, all Tua and all this.
Well, he's not playing.
Right, because in the second half, they throttle it back. They're not scoring at the same clip. But how awesome and amazing that is. Like, think about it. You're driving around in your car. Imagine a college football team so good that every single play of every second half of the season, they could just take a knee and still be in the top 15 of offense in the entire country.
Alabama's not good. They're just hot.
The CCT scoreboard on ESPN 1000.
She's so hot.
And she's sitting right there.
She's so hot.
But, you know, she's still not averaging as many yards per play as she did the last 2 years.
But she, that is the pimple on a 9.5. That's really what it is. A pimple she can get rid of like in a day. Or cover it with makeup.
Only 0.02 points per possession than they were last year as well.
I think we know guys in our that we've worked with that won't take on it. They won't date a 10 because she looks more like a 9.6.
Well, look. I'm always
nervous. Is that
supposed
to be somebody?
I'm always
nervous. Is that a NBA reporter that's not in Chicago anymore?
She's not quite as hot as I thought. She's more like a 9.7.
From the Bay Area now?
He's got a great beard going now.
Covering the best team in the NBA?
Saw him on that ESPN screen yesterday. Be here on Monday.
Yes, Nick Friedell is who we're talking about. Let's take a look at the top 25 scoreboard here in Chicago's College Tailgate. Clemson's up 35-0 on Florida State with 14 minutes left in the third quarter. Wisconsin and Nebraska and Northwestern, 6 minutes left in the third quarter. Northwestern's up 21-10 on Wisconsin. How about that? Is this the victory we need for the Wildcats to make next week against Notre Dame? Intriguing.
Nah, that's a night game.
Abdallah's not paying attention. All right, the other scores going on in the top 25 or in college football in the Big Ten, Purdue and Michigan State. Michigan State's up 13-6 on Purdue after that big victory last week for Purdue. 6 minutes left in the third quarter there. Nebraska at the end of the third quarter is up 38-3 on Bethune-Cookman. And that's your top 25 scoreboard in the Big Ten scoreboard right here on Chicago's College Tailgate.
Right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Jonathan, Adam, and Chris with you. Another game we got to keep our eyes on because you know
Texas is back, folks!
Number 6, Texas at Oklahoma State.
Tom Herman's got that team going in the right direction, there's no doubt.
What we've done up until this point is irrelevant, absolutely irrelevant in terms of of what we do Saturday night in Stillwater. So, you know, I was asked that on my radio show today about, you know, you've won X number of games in a row. Do you feel like the bye week, the open date is coming at a bad time? And the answer is no, because again, just like we talk about momentum being a illusion in the course of a game, it is in the course of a season, in the course of anything. You know, I mean, how do you win on Saturday in Stillwater? You prepare like champions prepare, and you go cut it loose. And it doesn't matter what you did the week before or what you're going to do the next week or what you did last year or what you did at any point in time. What matters is this week's worth of preparation. We're 0-0, and you know, momentum, none of that stuff really applies. They're all one-game seasons.
Wow. I'm going to go with Oklahoma State now. Well, that's clearly the rare Gundy bird is out there in Austin.
It sounds like the Velociraptor from Jurassic Park, no?
That's not good, is it, Adam?
No, it's I don't know what kind of bird that is. If someone knows, if we have a bird expert out there that could let us know what kind of bird that is.
Can we get the first part of that clip
again? It might
again?
Affect the so total. Well, he has a radio show.
Hear that bird?
He'll tell you.
Well, this is going to be an interesting ABC primetime matchup as the Longhorns take on Oklahoma State. The Longhorns are 11-1 all-time when they're ranked, and the Cowboys are unranked, by the way. Sam Ellinger, he's going to play. He's got a shoulder injury. It looks like he's going to play for the Longhorns. Mike Gundy, by the way, he has his expectations. He's a man. He's 40.
Offensively, we've gone into games where we haven't protected very well and then games we haven't run blocked very well. We really haven't put it together in a while, so I'd like to see that. And then defensively, we go through phases where we don't defend the deep ball very well, and then we haven't defended the run very well, and we really haven't put that together, so I'd like to see us do that. That would be a good start.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Adam. Defensively, Oklahoma State leading the FBS in sacks, so they got that going for them.
Well, possible look-ahead letdown position for Texas as they play West Virginia next week. So a possible look ahead. You know, you've got Sam Ellinger who's dealing with the shoulder. You said he's going to play, but he still has that shoulder problem. And if you lead the country in sacks, like they do, getting to the quarterback and that shoulder may become an issue as the game goes on because he's going to be nursing that the entire game. And you might be back, Texas, but just don't be looking ahead to West Virginia.
The thing that perks my ears up on that is you said a possible look ahead game for Texas because Tom Herman and Texas and Tom Herman at Houston, he was awesome at the big spot game, right? But you got the look ahead game, the trap game. You're right. Abdallah, are we playing a money line parlay with Oklahoma State today? What we're doing?
We are now.
Okay. All right. Just throwing that out there. What else are we matching with that? I know we're not at our picks yet, but what you texted me something yesterday that we were going to play.
I texted you an early parlay, but that it's not going so well. We need Purdue to come through. There was a good parlay I liked. It was Purdue, it was Washington State, and it was Florida. I liked that parlay. Sorry, Jonathan.
You love college football? You've come to the right place. Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
We're going to go out there. We're going to play the game.
All of the latest college football scores, previews, and lines. You love college football? Tailgate with us. Along with Chris Black and Adam Abdallah. Here's Jonathan Hood.
We'll have our Saturday night specials coming up at the top of the hour. We'll give you the best plays against the number right here on Chicago's College Tailgate. Follow us on Twitter at ESPN1000CCT. And as you guys both know, ESPN1000CCT, if you're a college football fan, that's for you because it's not just writers, not just broadcasters, but fans are a part of this mix as well. There's a lot of stuff going on there, so you got to check that out on ESPN1000CCT. We also want to remind you that coming up on November 10th, this show will be on the road. We'll be at the Four Winds Casino at the K&K Grill, our old stomping grounds. Look forward to being there. We'll be there before the Notre Dame-Florida State game, 3 to 5:30 Chicago time, right here on ESPN 1000, November 10th.
Come hang out with us. Put it all on black. Have some food. Enjoy some college football talk. Put it all in red.
Beautiful new casino, and the restaurant's great, so come hang out with us. It'll be a great time. We'll watch some college football. We'll talk some college football, and we'll make fun of Abdallah in Alabama.
If you feel Hammond, Indiana, and Gary, Indiana, that you're not getting the best money and value for those casinos, come to the Four Winds Casino Kankakee Grill in South Bend, Indiana.
Predicting an Alabama loss, is that why you're going to be making fun of me?
No, it's just fun to give you stuff, you know, and make fun of all your nonsense and your
bust chops. No, we're not busting chops.
We're not busting any chops. We're just going to make fun of you for being a front-running Alabama fan.
That's fine. Enjoy Herm tonight.
We turn now to the Bleacher Report and CBS columnist Steve Silverman. He'll help us out on some of the games for this college football Saturday. He is with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Hello, Silvio.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Happy game day to you, sir.
Yes, this is a big day. But, of course, next week you get the Alabama-LSU game. But I know this is a special day for you as well.
You know, every year is a special day. The world's largest outdoor cocktail party. I'll start there with you. When you take a look at the matchup and the number, what stands out most about it from a gambling standpoint?
Well, I think the fact that Georgia had a week off after that loss. So I think Kirby Smart is going to get a good effort out of his team. Now, you know, the point spread here is very concerning to me, though, because Florida's on a roll. Both teams are 6-1. You know, Florida's kind of a unexpected 6-1, and to think that Georgia is going to cover this spread, to cover the 7 points, that's a concern to me. I think Georgia's going to win the game. I think, you know, they've had a couple of tough weeks of practice, and they'll be ready. But Florida's a very good team, so this is likely to be, you know, a classic game in this series. Could come down to the last possession. Georgia's the better team, and they'll win, though.
Another matchup between ranked opponents tonight, Washington State at Stanford. Is the wrong team favored in this game?
I don't think so. You know, I think when you go on the road in the Pac-12 against an established team, I think it's hard to beat them. So Stanford's a short price favorite. I like Stanford. You know, Washington State played a really big game last week. And, you know, to think that they're going to come back and do it again, and this time they're on the road, that bothers me. So, maybe some of the wise guys are thinking Washington State going to win. But I like Stanford. I like, you know, Bryce Love to maybe show what he can do, what he really hasn't done so much this year. I think it's a big chance for Stanford. I like them to win, and, you know, 2.5 points, no problem. They're going to win by 7 points or more.
In a game that we're going to have here on ESPN 1000, Notre Dame travels to San Diego to face Navy. It's a big number, Steve. Do we have to worry at all about Notre Dame not being able to cover the 24 points?
The only thing you'd have to worry about is if, you know, Brian Kelly didn't get his team prepared, took a look at Navy and said, you know what, this is not the same Navy team that we play every single year, and it's definitely not. I mean, Navy at 2-5 is just not the team. But I don't see Brian Kelly leaving his team unprepared. I think, you know, you worry about the Navy running game. Malcolm Perry can run the ball, got 7 touchdowns, over 700 yards. But I think Notre Dame rolls in this game. They're probably up 4 touchdowns by halftime, and they're not going to let this game slip away. So, you know, if you want to go against the favorite, this is not the game to do it.
Steve Silverman from Bleacher Report and the CBS. He's with us here on Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. In an hour from now, Steve, we've got a interesting Big Ten matchup. Before we talk about the number with Penn State and Iowa, I just want to get your thoughts on the Penn State program. 5-2 against an Iowa team that had one trip up at 6-1. What do you think, first of all, about Penn State and what Franklin has done as head coach?
I don't like him. I think he's fairly ordinary. I think that last year's team with Saquon Barkley, you know, was a great team. But I think it was due more to Barkley than anything else. And, you know, without him around, I think Penn State has not played up to expectations this year. And I put a lot of that on Franklin. And here's a game where, you know, they should win. They're at home, you know, against an overachieving Iowa team. Iowa, you know exactly what you're going to get. They play very straightforward game, not a lot of trick plays. And I would, you know, I would expect that Penn State wins this game based on talent and the fact that they're at home and it's a perfect situation for them. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Iowa come up with the good game and upset them, largely because Franklin has led a disappointing effort this year. I don't like him at all.
A game that's going on right now, Northwestern leading Wisconsin. Are you surprised at this score right now?
Well, Wisconsin's not the team that we've seen, you know, for what, the past dozen, past 15 years. All of a sudden they're having problems with their defense. You can run on them, you can crease them a little bit, and you know, they have big problems at quarterback. So I would expect, you know, this is a year where Wisconsin's not that good, but they will bounce back in the future. And Northwestern, you know, whenever you think they're going to win big, they fall on their faces, usually against the MAC team. But then when they play tough teams, they find a way to win. So I don't know how you guys think, but to me, Pat Fitzgerald, as good as he is at recruiting and, you know, can do a good job in front of the cameras, game strategy-wise, I think he's always coaching by his heartstrings, and that makes him make a lot of mistakes. But it's working out very well for him today.
The strong opinion there, Silvio. You don't believe in Fitzgerald. You know how many people in the community very upset with that comment there.
Well, it's true. Look at the way he runs these games. He never goes for the field goal on fourth and short. He is always coaching by emotion. And, you know, it's fine once in a while when you pick your spot, but I've seen too many mistakes year after year after year. And he does a great job of recruiting. Look what they've done with their facilities. Much of this is on him and his ability to get people to believe in his program. But in games, he's too emotional.
So, Steve, the one thing that I'm looking at coming up at 3 o'clock, Kentucky, the 12th-ranked team in the country, 6-1. They're heading to Missouri, who's 4-3. Drew Locke, the quarterback at Missouri. The Tigers are favored by 7 points. How should people play this game?
They should steal money from their friends to bet on Kentucky. Getting the points, that, you know, this is the year for Kentucky. All of a sudden, they've got their opportunity. They're not going to let it slip against a Missouri team that is fairly talented but inconsistent. Yeah, maybe you're a little bit afraid because they're going on the road, but I don't think Columbia, Missouri is the place you really have to worry about them falling on their faces. I like the Kentucky Wildcats in this game. They can run the ball, and I think that's going to help them quite a bit in this game. Even if they don't win, they're certainly going to get within 7 points, and I do think they'll win.
So what are a couple of your best bets for the rest of the day?
Okay, well, I know we're going to need some savers at the end of the night, and I have two for you. And one of them's in the Pac-12. Oregon and Arizona. Oregon, 9.5-point favorites on the road. Forget about it. Go with Arizona plus the 9.5 points. J.J. Taylor, the running back, has 817 yards, and I think he's going to do a really good job of running the ball and finding a way to beat that team. I like Arizona at home. And I think that's the way to go in that game. And that's the one I would take. I also like in the Mountain West Conference, I like San Diego State. They're a 2-point favorite tonight. And on the road against Nevada, Nevada can't stop anybody. San Diego State can run the ball. Go with San Diego State.
Ah, no Hawaii pick this time. Against Fresno State.
That one scares me. I think Hawaii should get within the points, you know, the 24 points, because they played some decent football. But I think the odds makers know something there. So I would lean towards Hawaii, but I'm not going to put my money on it.
You're the best. Silvio, as always, I appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
All right, anytime, boys. I love it.
All right, it's Steve Silverman from Bleacher Report and the CBS columnist with us here on Chicago's College Tailgate. As we get ready for a scoreboard, it's funny that he should mention
number 17 Penn State at number 18 Iowa.
With James Franklin, did you hear, Chris?
Yeah.
he sees what I see with James Franklin. A lot of bravado, a lot of conversation. But, again, good program. But I just don't think that that's a Big Ten champion in the future under Franklin.
Are you saying his speech after the loss to Ohio State didn't get you fired up? You guys remember that? He was at the podium. This will never happen in an elite program again. If we're going to be elite, this is never going to happen. WWE here. I'm James Franklin.
He cut
my promo.
It was a great program trying to get elite. Yeah, I'm like, right. Yeah? When? Paterno?
Well, I mean, 1970?
In the heyday?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that it's going to take a little bit more time for him to have an elite program at Penn State. I still think they're damn good, though. I don't think Penn State is fake by any means.
All right. The coach is fake.
Well, I mean, like today, okay, against Iowa, look, Penn State and Iowa, who, if you guys had to give me a percentage on who's faker, who's the biggest fake job between those two,
what?
Iowa and Penn State, who would you pick?
Well, Ferentz is not fake. I mean, he's an NFL coach every year. He's always in the mix for an NFL job.
That's a storyline from 2003, right?
Every year, though, Ferentz is in a position to be a head coach in the NFL.
I think that the problem is...
Who's the bigger faker, Abdallah?
I don't know if Penn State is going to be elite again. Like last year, we saw the best Penn State team. You had the best running back in the country. You had one of the best quarterbacks in the country. You had an elite defense. It was a tough place to play. All that kind of stuff, right? I think now Iowa and Penn State are on that same level where they're like, well, they could creep up and maybe beat somebody. But yep. Then they're just going to be that, like, that middle. They're like, it's them and, like, Michigan State. And I'm trying to think of another Big Ten team that kind of fits that criteria. Northwestern, I guess. Wisconsin can end up being in that criteria. Like, you're going to have the levels of the Big Ten. It's going to be Ohio State, Michigan. It's going to be those teams that can maybe creep up and beat one of those teams once every couple of years. And then you're just going to have the Illinois.
Okay, so since you mentioned Michigan State, right now, Michigan State and Purdue, it's the end of the third quarter. It's 16-13, Michigan State, with the lead, a three-point lead. On Bovada, live gambling for this game, Purdue is plus 155.
What do you think?
I mean, listen, heading into the game, I think we would have all agreed. Well, right. I had the money line on Purdue to start with, so I'm doubling down. I'm getting in on that again.
Purdue is back.
Let's talk about Purdue. Absolutely.
Again, their ceiling is one of those teams that, yeah, they're decent and they're just going to come up and try to beat one of those teams every once in a while, like they beat Ohio State. And we're going to have the same conversation. Like, Purdue going to be last year's Iowa, where Ohio State and a Big Ten team gets left out of the championship? And we're like, well, don't go on the road and lose by 29 to Purdue.
Well, and then the storyline with Purdue is Jeff Brohm going to stay there long term?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Last week we were talking about Kentucky and Stoops and how if they have a great season there, someone else is going to poach him away to a bigger program. Jeff Brohm, is he going to stay for a long time at Purdue?
Probably not. And I hate to say this, a stepping stone program, and I don't want to go Colin Cowherd saying places like West Lafayette, you know, Penn State, you know, stepping stone programs, cold, isolated West Lafayette. But
how many Fortune 500 companies are in West Lafayette?
I don't want to Colin on you, but there's just some programs where there's a ceiling on the success.
Size
I totally
of the
get
airport,
it. Absolutely.
The CCT scoreboard on ESPN 1000.
Here's Chris Black, Chris.
All right, guys, Clemson's up big on Florida State. Florida State is yet to score today. 7 minutes left in the third quarter. It's 45-0 in favor of the Clemson Tigers, the second-ranked team in the country. Wisconsin and Northwestern playing in Evanston. 12:50 left in the fourth quarter. Northwestern leads 31-10 on Wisconsin.
Which one of you two are going to say Wisconsin's a fraud? I'm waiting for that.
Abdallah, it's all you, my friend. Go ahead.
Wisconsin's a fraud.
Well, I mean, their starting quarterback's not playing
today. Yeah, that's true.
I don't care.
All right, the game that we were just talking about, Michigan State up 3 on Purdue, early fourth quarter, 16-13, Purdue with the ball and driving once again. Nebraska's up 45-3 on Bethune-Cookman as we are walking. We're about half an hour away from some of the other kickoffs in college football, the 2:30 kicks, and that's the current scoreboard right here on Chicago's College Tailgate.
All right, we'll have our Saturday night specials coming up as we lead you into Georgia, Florida, right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. As we go to break, you'll hear from Kirk Ferentz, the head coach for Iowa. He previews the matchup against Penn State at 2:30.
You know, one thing about playing Penn State, and this has been true for a long, long time, you're guaranteed they're going to have good players, and they do. They've recruited well forever up there. They're tremendously gifted, tremendously athletic, and they've got good size, speed, talent. That's a given. The other part about anytime you go to State College, you're going to play in a great venue. It's a very challenging place to play. It's a great college venue, very loud crowd, and enthusiastic crowd. So all those things are constants, and it's going to certainly be the same this week for us as we get ready. I think really, what it gets down to is us doing a good job at the things we've done a pretty good job of this season. We've prepared well for the most part during the course of the year. We've shown up and played pretty hard. Those are things that are going to have to continue if we're going to be successful this week, certainly.
You love college football? Tailgate with us. It's time to put money in your pocket.
What's wrong with making a few bucks on the side?
It's the Saturday Night Special.
You want some of this, don't you?
Yeah!
Well, you need to know the winner. And I know the winner.
It's time to put money in your pocket. It's the Saturday Night Special on Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000.
All right, place your bet.
Leonard Skinner. It is time for our Saturday Night Specials right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. It's only been, 9 weeks finally I got to be able to get to the hook. Finally got there without talking over the lyrics. It is Chicago's College Tailgate here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Follow us on Twitter at ESPN 1000 CCT. All right. This is not only for the radio show that we're doing right now at 2:05, but also for you podcast listeners, because I'm sure we'll have some night games for you as well. So listen up. We've always got some winners for you here on our Saturday Night Specials. I will start first, gentlemen. How about Illinois? Illinois taking on Maryland today. The Illinois defensive front has had its moments, but it's allowed 350 rushing yards or more in two of the last four games, 215 or more in four of the last five games, losing all four, by the way. Overall, these teams with Illinois and Maryland, overall, these teams are kind of mirror images of one another. Illinois is dead last in the Big Ten in pass efficiency defense, and Maryland is second. Neither team's going to throw the ball very well. Last time I checked, I saw that Maryland was a 17-point favorite. Because both of these teams are not that good, let me give me Illinois plus 17. Yes, and I also will throw in a little under 53 action if that's the case as well.
I'll have you know, Jonathan, that we partially agree.
The under or the...
Partially agree.
All right, well...
Both teams, top 25 in rushing yards per game. Both teams, top 25 in rushing downs per game. Mm-hmm. You know what that means? Tick, 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 tick. The clock is going to run. I'll also have you know that over-under is now up.
What is it now?
To 54.5.
Oh. At 6 a.m., it was 53.
It was 51 yesterday.
Oh.
Under 54.5.
We'll do that number.
That's what I'm doing.
That's fine.
Under 54.5. For Illinois and Maryland.
You were on that too?
Yes, yeah. All right,
that's his first pick.
That's okay. My first play, yeah.
Oh, let me put it in the margin here.
Yeah.
Jonathan thought you just thought he was just agreeing.
I wrote it down. I wrote it down.
I want that pick.
That's my first play. I wrote it down earlier.
So, Eric, it's going to be, for me, under 54.5 / Illinois plus 17 against Maryland. And then Adam takes the under 53.5 also.
You know what that was? Jonathan walked up to the window in Vegas, and Adam's standing behind him, chiming in. Yeah, but he wants a ticket, too.
Yeah, of course I do.
Give me a ticket, too. Can you print off two of those?
Especially with a better number. You're only helping me, giving me points.
Just give me the ticket as well.
I thought Adam was helping me. He's like, no, the numbers changed, sir.
The numbers changed. I'm helping you.
Yeah. All right, so no. Yeah. Well, whatever it is, it's the under. I'll take the under for that. So there you go. Chris? Now we got Adam out of the way. Now we move over to Chris now with his first pick.
All right, guys. You got about 25 minutes to get this one in. ESPN 2 at 2:30, South Florida faces off at Houston. South Florida is 7-0 on the season. Houston is 6-1. South Florida, even though undefeated, they are 70th ranked in the FPI. Houston's ranked 52nd. Now, a lot of talk was speculation on Ed Oliver not playing today. Mm-hmm. He tweeted about an hour ago saying, where are people seeing this? I'm playing today.
Oh.
So Ed Oliver is expected to play for Houston. If I look at this game, the line right now is minus 10 Houston going against an undefeated ranked 21st in the country South Florida team. I think Houston gets them. They are averaging 48.7 points per game, second most in FBS behind Alabama at 54.1. The Cougars have 13 touchdowns of drives of 1 minute or less, third most in all of college football. The offense could score. Ed Oliver's going to play. The defense is going to be able to limit South Florida. Minus 10 Houston is the pick.
Minus 10 Houston for Chris Bleck and his picks as we do our Saturday night specials here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. These games this week. Okay, Washington State, Stanford. So from Washington State standpoint, the passing game continues to be magnificent. Gardner Minshew continues to be exactly the right fit for the attack. He might have thrown two picks last week against Oregon, and he and the offense might have stalled a bit after a hot start, but he got the win. Stanford, here's the number. Stanford is 5-0 this season when holding teams to 13 points or fewer. 0-3 when teams score more. Washington State is going to score more. I have Washington State plus 3 against Stanford. Adam?
Once again, Jonathan.
Washington
leads the country in passing yards. Are they good at passing, they're the best team in the country in passing yards. Stanford, second to last in the Pac-12 at defending the pass. Stanford, 1-4 against the spread as a home favorite of 6 or less. Stanford has been outscored 30-0 in the fourth quarter of their last three games.
Didn't know that.
I see it at 2.5. So
you're having 2.5.
Yeah, I think they're going to win outright. So I'll take whatever to the line. I don't care. I'll sprinkle a little bit on the money line if you want. Okay. I like Washington State plus 3, 2.5, 2, 1.5, 1, half. Pick them.
Half.
Yeah, the current line on Sportsbook right now is 2.5.
2.5 then, okay. All right, so Adam has Washington State plus 2.5, and so do I.
Is your third pick going to be Penn State, Iowa?
It will not.
Okay, good. Then we won't have the same pick there.
No. Because if not, I would have changed it. Because we can't do that. We can't do that on the show. Well, no, my next pick is from Conference USA. So go ahead. Go ahead, Chris. Go right ahead.
Scroll to the bottom to find Conference USA.
It has just been, it's been a trying week. All the cash is early, but we're on the air, so. We turn now to Chris Bleck with his pick. Chris?
Chris?
What's wrong?
Guys, my second pick.
Oh, no! It's going to be Washington State! No!
I think people might want to have to go the other way. My second pick.
Pull out!
I have written down for my second pick, I have Washington State.
Plus 2.5.
Well, now they're going to get rolled. So that's
the triple stamp from Chicago's College Tailgate.
Can't do that. You know what happened last time?
Yeah, I lost. We all come to the table separately with our picks, and we just somehow picked this as our second game, all three of us.
I'm pulling
all
out.
On the same beat.
Take that off, Eric. Take that off the board for me.
I mean, because we're all... Washington plus the 2.5 is where I'm going to go. No love for Bryce Love.
I will pick another game. Screw this. I'm not going to... Because we can't do that to the audience. Because they're going to ride with us, and then all of a sudden here comes Love's best game all season.
Hey, it is what it is.
Running the football.
No, his worst game of the season against them last year.
Yeah. We're all in Washington State. Come on.
No. Okay. Here's the third.
Okay.
Here's my second game. And that is, here's my second game. I'll give you a third game in a moment. Because we can't all do all three. We can't do that. I'll write it down. But
it is
what
it is. Hey, this is not rehearsed. This is not planned. We just all picked it.
So UAB will take on UTEP. UTEP is 0-7, and they're looking to break the chains of that Bud Light. They're trying to break the chain so they can get that Bud Light if possible. UTEP is 0-7, and UAB 6-1.
How much would UTEP like to break that brutal losing streak by beating a leader of the Conference USA? They just want to beat anybody, right? I think the, if you remember last week, Chris, I took UTEP with the points and got, and it came through for me. They played closer to the experts think, and I got the victory there. The Miners really are playing better, but they're still close losses. That's the problem. Meanwhile, UAB has been brilliant. There's that brutal loss to Coastal Carolina, of course, to screw things up, but UTEP just doesn't have the offense to deal with the Blazer D, pardon expression. The Miners don't have a passing game. They're still turning the ball over too much. The number is UAB is a 16-point favorite. I love UAB minus 16. I like the under 50 also in this game. UAB over the worst team in college football, UTEP. Adam?
Did you give, when you gave an update, Chris, to the score, sidetrack for a second. Mm-hmm. Did you, when you gave an update to the Clemson score?
Yeah.
What was it?
It was, I think, 45-3. It's now 52-3.
Okay. So at one point during this game, Florida State felt the need to kick a field goal is what,
Okay. They didn't want to go scoreless. I can tell you exactly when they kicked that, by the way.
God.
They kicked that field goal. They kicked it with, 4:35 left in the third quarter. 35-yard field goal. The score is 45-3. It's now 52-3.
Really? Okay. So my first pick was Illinois Maryland under. My last pick is going to be another under in the Big Ten. I'm going with some bad Big Ten football.
He skipped right over the Washington State.
No. I'm saying because of, I was going to give that pick third as because I was going to give them by kickoff time.
Okay.
So Washington State was going to be my last pick. But you gave it, so I felt the need to piggyback
on
it.
And then I piled on.
Yeah, exactly. But it was going to be my last pick. So my last pick in the is Penn State, Iowa, under 51. Trace McSorley's completion percentage has fallen 13% from last year. Penn State's defense has only allowed 5.8 yards per attempt, which is 15th best in the country. Iowa is number one in the country in limiting explosive plays. It's going to be rainy there, too. Run the ball, control the clock. These two teams can fight each other till the end. That's fine, whatever. As long as it goes under 51, which I think it will. So that's my final play. Penn State, Iowa, under 51.
Chris?
Guys, what are you doing later tonight? Say 9:30.
Chasing.
Central time.
Chasing.
What was your under, by the way? Penn State, Iowa, what?
51.
51. Thank you. Go ahead.
9:30 on ESPN tonight. Oregon, the 19th ranked team in the country, 5-2, heads to Arizona, who are 3-5 on the season. And here's the key thing that I think most people hanging into the game may be unsure about. Khalil Tate, quarterback for Arizona, is questionable. And even if he plays tonight, he's going to be banged up. On the other side of the ball, Justin Herbert. For Oregon, top-rated quarterback in the country, probably the top-rated quarterback that will go into the NFL draft next season. If you look at it, the FBI suggests that Oregon has a 65% chance to win this game. They're ranked 29th in the country in the FBI. Arizona, they're ranked 62nd. Their season's been a disaster. The number is Oregon minus 9.5. I am taking Oregon on the road minus the 9.5, gentlemen.
That's not what Steve Silverman said.
I'm aware, and I'm taking Oregon.
Can I help you?
Also, the Bear Felica also took Arizona.
And because of those, can I help you out, Chris?
What would you like?
Can I help you out? Because of those sharps, those betting experts, and Steve Silverman and the Bear Felica, this number is now down to 8.5.
That's great.
So
fine by me.
You'll get a little extra. Get a little extra mustard.
It's dropped a point since we've been on the air.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I will take the 8.5. It's great. Rack it in.
What?
Rack it up?
Rack it in?
Rack it in.
Rack it somewhere?
So what is it now? Arizona what?
8.5.
Arizona getting 8.5?
No, Oregon minus 8.5. Yeah, Oregon minus 8.5.
Oregon minus 8.5. Okay. Because I'm typing it into the ESPN 1000 CCT Twitter as we speak.
Rack it in, stack it up, let's go.
Roll it.
8.5?
Roll it. 8.5.
Okay.
Roll it with a dab of ranch.
Okay.
Throw it downfield, let's go.
All right, here's guys, if you don't believe in our Washington State pick because we all took Washington State.
I don't blame you.
Let me give you another one. Hawaii. Hawaii plus 25.5 against Fresno State. There you go.
You're just, okay, in-game betting, Purdue now plus 140 And I believe they have the ball down three against Michigan State with 4 minutes left in the game.
You think Fresno State's that much better than Hawaii, by the way?
I don't know.
That's not, you can't say that on the air.
I know.
what just happened? I think the Abdallah bot just malfunctioned. what is that?
Well, Jonathan, let me tell you that in college football, 25 points is a lot for any team.
Wow,
especially a frisky Hawaii team heading to Fresno. The Bulldogs, I believe they're decent. I just don't know if they're 25 points better than Hawaii.
Okay. Here's what we'll do. Here's a tiebreaker. Let's all three of us do a tiebreaker. Because nobody took Texas and Oklahoma State. You scared that game, Adam?
No, I like Oklahoma State.
So for what? You like the plus three?
3.5, yeah.
Oh, it's up to 3.5 now.
Yeah, that's what I got.
My Bovada has 3.
Well, you're Bovada.
No, I'm just asking. You would take the 3 in the hook, right?
I would want it at the hook, yes. I would want the hook.
Yeah.
You also like Oklahoma
State.
I would
hook it. I may or may not money line the Oklahoma State game already today. So,
what about the over under? This over under 61. What would you say to the over under 61? I would take the under there.
I don't know. I think it could be a shootout. I think you could. I think it could be. I think you could see a lot of points in that game. But I'll probably be wrong.
I just wouldn't play the under because I don't like not rooting for points.
Oh, yeah. Like, I hit my Illinois, Maryland, like, and Penn State, fun. Iowa. It's not fun, but I like them.
Oh, but it's just those games. But this kind of high profile, you don't know what Oklahoma State could do.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
Like, I don't want to watch two teams just mash into each other. Like, that's not fun. That's why it's the Big Ten.
Ah. So, we actually all three of us agree on Oklahoma State,
of course.
We still can't break the tie.
So rack it in.
All right. All right, so that means I'm going to have to pick.
I need a shirt with that. Okay. I need a shirt with that right now.
Rack it in.
Stack it up.
I need a Chicago CCT. I need a rack it in.
Rack it in. I love that in pink. As you're listening to Chicago's College Tailgate, you're on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Don't forget, it is Notre Dame against Navy. Ryan Harris, the color analyst for the Fighting Irish. I was talking about how he's impressed with quarterback Ian Book.
Well, the thing that really, to me, the turning point for Ian Book was at Virginia Tech. He faced some adversity early, threw an interception, wasn't kind of clicking the way he had been all season, but he found a way to win and found a way to blow them out. And they were averaging 47 points per game going into the game last week or 2 weeks ago against Pitt. Now at Pitt, he faced adversity again and still found Miles Boykin, wide receiver, for a touchdown in the fourth quarter to separate and end up being the game-winning touchdown. So you've got a quarterback who's got incredible talent, throws the ball with a spin rate of 90 to 92. And to give you an example, you got Aaron Rodgers there at the Green Bay Packers. He has a spin rate of about 95. So incredible velocity, incredible accuracy, over 70% accuracy his entire season this year. First time that's been done since 1950. And you got a guy who's faced adversity. And Hood, man, you got to face adversity to be great. He's faced that already. And even through winning, you can face adversity. He's done that. I think he'll continue to improve as the season goes on.
It's college football's highest honor.
From now on, your name will be followed by the words Heisman Trophy winner.
I will be the Heisman.
Along with Chris Black and Adam Abdallah, here's Jonathan Hood.
Time for Tua Watch. Here's Chris Black. Chris?
Last week, Tua Tagovailoa had 4 touchdowns against Tennessee, 306 yards. Once again, was not needed in the fourth quarter of that game. As we take a look at the candidates for the Heisman Trophy, obviously, Tua leads the way. So the conversation is, who's second? Who would you guys play second? Is it Kyler Murray for Oklahoma and Dwayne Haskins from Ohio State? Are there others in the mix? Maybe an Ed Oliver on the outside looking at a defensive player to try and get into that conversation to be invited to the Tua ceremony later in December.
Well, I think it is, for me, it's Tua, it's Dwayne Haskins. Why can't Etienne from Clemson be invited to the conversation as well? I don't see Ed Oliver being in this mix at all. I don't think he's going to get invited. But Kyler Murray will be invited as well for Oklahoma State, for Oklahoma rather. So Tua, Dwayne Haskins, Kyler Murray, Travis Etienne for me.
Travis Etienne today, 10 carries, 45 yards, no touchdowns. Clemson is just killing Florida State, 59-3 in the fourth quarter, early in the fourth right now.
I figured that it'll be a battle between Tua and Kyler Murray. Dwayne Haskins is going to have a really big game, I think, against Michigan to have a say in this. So right now, I think it's a matter of Tua and Kyler. It's a matter of Tua, basically, essentially. Like, Tua just can't get hurt and has to play well the rest of the way, and he should be fine.
Well, and the reason is, it's not because we're overhyping anything. If we go back to the conversation that we were talking about earlier, the Action Network had the stats that if Alabama kneed down the ball each and every play in the second half of every game this season, they'd still have an elite offense. What they're doing at Alabama on offense this season is something we haven't seen in college football in quite a long time.
Can you have a Heisman winner that hasn't played in a fourth quarter?
Yeah, absolutely, because they're so good and the stats are so great.
Yeah,
for sure.
I assume he'll have to play in the fourth quarter against LSU.
It depends. If his moment is coming out and they put up 49 points on LSU in the first half, then that's it, right? Like, it's completely done.
Yeah. I mean, if they find a way to win that game like that, it's over. Then he could face it in the SEC championship game, and then the award's given out before the playoffs, so there's not really a say in who has the better playoff game, essentially.
All right, guys, we're going to lead into Georgia, Florida right here on ESPN 1000, ESPN app. You know which way I'm going with the matchup. You know, as a big Georgia fan, it's the biggest game of the year. Adam, how do you see the matchup?
I think it's going to be close. I think you're a tough SEC football game. I think Georgia wins the game. I think they can win the game. I think Florida covers the 7, though. I think this is a, like we've heard all day, last team with the ball kind of wins type of thing. Just hope we don't have a college kickers incident. And I think Georgia can win this game.
Chris?
ESPN's FBI gives Florida a 70% chance to win the game, Jonathan. So that's looking good for the Bulldogs.
I think that Georgia can win the ball game, but again, it's about being aggressive going down the field. The running game is not as strong as the last couple of years, but I think this should be a Fromm game. At least you would think so, right?
Stick with it.
We thank you for listening and being part of the program here on ESPN 1000. Our thanks to Chris Childers, Andy Hutchins, and Steve Silverman. Show produced by Eric Ostrowski on the other side of the glass. We'll talk to you next Saturday, another edition of Chicago's College Tailgate right here on ESPN 1000.
Texas is back, folks!